They by Rudyard Kipling. One view called me to another, one hilltop to its fellow half across the county, and since I could answer at no more trouble than the snapping forward of a lever, I let the county flow under my wheels. The orchid-studded flats of the east gave way to the thyme, ilex, and grey grass of the downs, these again to the rich cornland and fig trees of the lower coast, where you carry the beat of the tide on your left hand for 15 level miles. And when at last I turned inland through a huddle of rounded hills and woods, I had run myself clean out of my known marks. Beyond that precise hamlet which stands godmother to the capital of the United States, I found hidden villages where bees, the only things awake, boomed in 80-foot lindens that overhung grey Norman churches. Miraculous brooks diving under stone bridges built for heavier traffic than would ever vex them again. Tithe barns larger than their churches, and an old smithy that cried out aloud how it had once been a hall of the Knights of the Temple. Gypsies I found on a common where the gorse, bracken and heath fought it out together up a mile of Roman road, and a little further on I disturbed a red fox rolling dog fashion in the naked sunlight. As the wooded hills closed about me, I stood up in the car to take the bearings of that great down, whose ringed head is a landmark for 50 miles across the Low Countries. I judged that the lie of the country would bring me across some westward-turning road that went to his feet, but I did not allow for the confusing veils of the woods. A quick turn plunged me first into a green cutting brimful of liquid sunshine, next to a gloomy tunnel where last year's dead leaves whispered and scuffled about my tires. The strong hazel stuff, meeting overhead, had not been cut for a couple of generations at least, nor had any axe helped the moss-cankered oak and beech to spring above them. Here the road changed frankly into a carpeted ride, on whose brown velvet spent primrose clumps showed like jade, and a few sickly white-stalked bluebells nodded together. As the slope favoured, I shut off the power and slid over the whirled leaves, expecting every moment to meet a keeper. But I only heard a jay, far off, arguing against the silence under the twilight of the trees. Still the track descended. I was on the point of reversing and working my way back on the second speed, ere I ended in some swamp, when I saw sunshine through the tangle ahead and lifted the brake. As the light beat across my face, my four wheels took the turf of a great still lawn from which sprang horsemen 10 feet high with levelled lances, monstrous peacocks and sleek round-headed maids of honour, blue, black and glistening, all of clipped yew. Across the lawn, the marshalled woods besieged it on three sides, stood an ancient house of lichened and weather-worn stone, with mullioned windows and roofs of rose-red tile. It was flanked by semicircular walls, also rose-red, that closed the lawn on the fourth side, and at their feet a box hedge grew man-high. There were doves on the roof about the slim brick chimneys, and I caught a glimpse of an octagonal dove-house behind the screening wall. Here, then, I stayed, a horseman's green spear laid at my breast, held by the exceeding beauty of that jewel in that setting. If I am not packed off for a trespasser, or if this knight does not ride a wallop at me, thought I, Shakespeare and Queen Elizabeth at least must come out of that half-open garden door and ask me to tea. A child appeared at an upper window, and I thought the little thing waved a friendly hand. But it was a call to a companion, for presently another bright head showed. Then I heard a laugh among the yew peacocks, and turning to make sure, till then I had been watching the house only, I saw the silver of a fountain behind the hedge, thrown up against the sun. The doves